Okay, this is David Wolford. I'm interviewing Mr. Carl Hines in Louisville, Kentucky. It's June 15th, 2006. Mr. Hines, how are you today? How are you today?
Doing good.
Okay. Mr. Hines, I came to talk to you today about your experience in the pre-Brown schools in Louisville, and mostly your role as a school board member and chairman in the 70s. So if you don't mind, I'd like to just start with, why don't you just give us a little introduction, a little your background, where you grew up, and what your childhood and your high school days were like.
Well, I was born in Louisville. I grew up in the West End of Louisville. Attended elementary, junior high, and high school. Graduated from Central High School, which is a few blocks from here. I graduated in what used to be called mid-year classes. I graduated and we called it 49 and a half, which was January of 48 and a half, I'm sorry. And I attended, at that time I went to college at the University of Illinois in Champaign. Reason I went there because I was able to stay with my grandmother and could be considered a state student because I grew up as I say, in the West End and eventually in the Beecher Terrace housing project. And while attending Illinois, the Korean conflict broke out. And so I went in the Air Force, and I was in the Air Force for 3 years. When I came back, I started U of L, University of Louisville, and then I went back to Illinois for a year, but that didn't quite work out because I was a man going to school with kids, and so I came back to the University of Illinois and eventually graduated from the University of Louisville. I have a BS in sociology, and attended law school at the University of Louisville for, I was about halfway through when I got a call I went on the school board in 1968, in August of 1968, and to fill out the term of a retired member. And then in November of that year, I was elected for a full term. And 4 years later, I was elected for a second term. And of course, that was about the time that during that second term, near the end of the second term, really, it was in 1975 when all of the confusion started in regard to the court case that called for the integration of the city and county school board. When that happened, the court ruled that there should be a merger. And it was set up to merge at the time of the original merger. I think there were 11 or 12 members of the combined city and county boards. And being the then chairman of the Louisville board at the time, I was named vice chairman of the combined board. And then we proceeded from there, and I think each year the election process was set up so that it eventually evolved into a six-member board, which was the Jefferson County School Board, which it is now.
I see. Okay, now when you were at Central, let's go back there. You know, what were your fondest memories of Central High School?
Well, quite frankly, since my high school days, and from my perspective, were some of the best years of my life. And of course, we were in a desegregated school, and we were in an old raggedy building. And we found out down the road, which we didn't think about then, that we were using secondhand books and secondhand equipment and so forth that was passed down after it had been used or was outdated at the other schools, the white schools. And at that time, of course, the social situation was a little different from the perspective of activities and so forth. So I really enjoyed my 3 years at Central High School. I often look back on them with fond memories. But of course, that was, at that time, there was no consideration even of integration in the two school systems. In fact, the Louisville system was segregated. And then there was a county system, which was also segregated, but the county system was just a small system. It was kind of out there, you might say. And the Louisville system was the main system. In fact, black students who lived in the county then were either bussed into Louisville, and we'd speak of bussing, they were being bussed then into, especially in high school, because they didn't have a black high school in the county. And they were either bussed into Louisville or else the state paid for them to go to Lincoln Institute, which was out in Shelby County, out around Shelbyville, Kentucky. So I have very fond memories of my high school days. We didn't have all of the equipment and facilities and so forth that is available now, but we made it.
Did, when you attended Central, did they put a new building there and after you graduated, is that correct?
Oh yeah, long after I graduated. The new building, I think, opened in about 62. Somewhere,
right?
Something like that.
Okay.
In fact, my wife, I think, was in one of the first classes to graduate from the new Central, which is right across around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when urban renewal came through that area, and they set aside a couple of blocks over there for the new Central High School.
Did you play sports in high school?
No.
No? Okay. You say that you had no, I was going to ask you, did you or did your family or your classmates, did you see the Brown decision coming anytime soon when you were in school, or?
I really don't recall, of course, as a 15, 16, 17 year old, I really wasn't that interested in political situation. All I know is that we couldn't vote because of our age. So I don't recall even being interested in that. You know, that's the way things were. And I guess to some extent, although there was some movement going on in regard to some groups like the NAACP and other groups. And of course, this was pre-Martin Luther King. You know, and pre-desegregation in the South and so forth. So we really didn't deal with it to any large extent.
When the ruling came down, it was May of 1954 when Brown versus Board was decided. You had said you went in the military.
May of 1954, I was in the Air Force.
Abroad? Or outside of Louisville? You were gone
from
Louisville?
Yeah, I was gone. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then sometimes
I may have been in Korea. When I got back from Korea, '54, I was out. I had just gotten out.
Okay.
In May of '54.
Were you back to Louisville then?
I was back in Louisville.
Do you recall the feeling around the community either then that month or even in the next few months when this Brown decision came from the Supreme Court? Was there a certain prevailing attitude around here? Or?
Well, to be quite frank, as I said, at that time, the farthest thing from I was a 21-year-old, a 22-23-year-old guy that just got out of the single guy, just got out of the service, looking for a job, and had little or no interest in the political agenda or arena. I had not gotten involved in any of that type of activity, so I really don't recall even giving a lot of thought at that time to the situation of the integration of schools and so forth.
Okay. Well, once it started rolling, were you paying any attention then as members of the black community started attending white schools?
Well, what happened was as I evolved as an individual, I first started working for the government at the what's called the branch of the Corps of Engineers, which was the Army Map Service. And I eventually left the map service and went to work for the Mammoth Insurance Company. And when I went to work for the Mammoth Insurance Company, I had became involved in some social activities and some organizations that were around, so I kind of evolved into interest. And in 65, 66, a charter committee was formed. And I became a member of the charter committee. I was chosen to serve on the charter committee that first looked at the possibility, and in fact, we drew up a plan. It was sort of a pie-like plan. We drew up a plan to integrate the system countywide. If that had gone through, I think it probably was a better plan than the one that originally came about.
So you were talking about the Charter Committee.
Yeah, the Charter Committee, it was more or less sabotaged by one of the representatives from the county, because we thought we had a deal and we thought that everything was going fine and that the we had involved the city and county government and city county school board and so forth, but one of the influential members of the charter committee from representing the county sabotaged the whole deal and it just fell through.
Had a substantial number of residents already started moving toward the into the county, but before this committee.
Oh yeah, that started back in '50s.
Okay,
when it first came down in '54.
And then you were on this committee just as a general representative.
Yeah,
you weren't an office holder at that time.
No.
Community
right
representative.
Right.
And
that was my initial contact as far as public service was concerned.
And the charter committee. Who did that just kind of come to be, or did the Board of Ed?
I'm not sure. At that time, I was the manager of the Mammoth Life and Insurance Company home office district. And of course, in that, as I said, I had become involved with a lot of like the JCs and the and what have you, all these different organizations. And so when they started picking people to serve on the charter committee. Some of the powers that be contacted me and wanted to see if I would serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I agreed to serve. That was my first real contact with any type of thing, even remotely related to that type of service or anything that, leading up to elections and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you remember Omer Carmichael? Do you remember that name?
I remember the name. He was superintendent back in the 50s. Yeah.
Was there an impression of him in the black community have an opinion of this superintendent?
Not a very good one.
What was the reason for that?
Well, like most of your officials back then were reluctant to get into desegregation or integration. I mean, it wasn't only Omar Carmichael, it was a lot of the civilian, regular automatic people and so forth. And of course, you had the county, which was made up of a commission type of structure politically. You had a county commissioner and a county judge. And of course, Omar Carmichael, as prevailed in a lot of situations in Kentucky, He was one of the biggest employers in the area, you know, at the school board, because he had a lot of influence. And he did not show a great deal of enthusiasm for integration.
Till it was law, I guess. Or at all.
Well, they didn't show enthusiasm then. Of course, he wasn't the superintendent when the initial decision was made in 54. But, I mean, it's just like what happened when Truman integrated the services. You know, all the top generals resisted it to the best of their ability. You know, even though he made an executive order, but with the possible exception of the Air Force, which was one of the reasons I went in the Air Force, it took years and years and years before anything really was accomplished. Of course, now it stands out as an example of what could happen, but a lot of people don't realize that it took a long time before it actually took place. And it's the same way with the civilian institutions back then. You know, you not only had whereas the top person or the executive officer on the surface appeared to be going along with the order that has become law, but at the second, third level on down the line, you had those folks that were making moves and doing things that
slowing it down.
Obstructions, you know, obstructionists. So
I see.
That went on even after the schools were integrated and the desegregation plan in 1976. You know, it took a while before things really smoothed out.
In terms of like administrative positions and things like that. You mean, right?
I mean, that was a lot of meetings and strategy on the part of the both boards of education trying to position themselves so that when the final thing took place, we knew that the county was probably going to try to, since Newman Walker was the superintendent of the Louisville School District, Sam Noe was the superintendent of the county. And when the integration took place, we used to meet on a regular basis, strategizing, and I'm sure they were doing the same thing out there as to what move they made that we could counter and how they would counter and what have you. And it was like a war game, so to speak. And I mean, we had a war room, really, where we would play, and we had a big things on the wall, you know, and so forth. And we also kind of worked on a theory that the cream would rise to the top, you know, because we knew from a ability standpoint and so forth that we had the better staff. We had the better qualified staff.
Teaching staff.
Teaching and administrative. Because what you had in the county at that time were a lot of PE people in critical positions. You know, because back then, that was the road to success in a lot of school systems. You know, you were a coach, and then if you somehow managed to get a master's degree and your administrative certificate, you ended up being a principal, and then you went into the whole main office, and you moved on up. You know, and that's what they had out there.
I think that hasn't changed that much, let me tell you.
Yeah, there's still a lot of that.
Yeah.
But in the city, we had people that were credentialed and didn't necessarily come from an academic, I mean from an athletic background, you know. And eventually, over several years, as things evolved, because there was an agreement that neither of the existing superintendents would be over the combined district. The two of them agreed.
That no, was that Van Hoos and Walker or
Van
No?
Van Hoos. I said No.
When was No? Was No before Van Hoos?
Yeah. No. No was in the city.
Before Walker.
Before Walker.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So yeah. Van Hoos and Walker were the two superintendents
right.
through the busing dispute. Right. So the busing dispute pretty much played out.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, Van. I said No was in the county. I'm correct. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Van. Yeah, Van Hoos. And when I went on school board, Sam Noel was
the
superintendent in 1968. And then Newman Walker. In fact, I was on the search committee that brought Newman Walker here.
What was how did that play out? How did you, because I understand he was pretty well revered when he arrived.
Yeah.
What? Give me an understanding of why Newman Walker was brought to Louisville.
Well, Sam Noel decided to retire, and so we did a nationwide search, and way the criteria was set up, we had several candidates, but Newman had done an outstanding job in Paducah. His credentials were very impressive, and so that's
credentials in terms of just academics or
and administrative ability and the whole bit.
What about was race and desegregation part of the decision at that point?
Oh, well, that course became a part of the decision, and you know, in the interviews and so forth, we needed to know, you know, exactly what. The intentions would be of the new superintendent. And of course, Newman, he really upset the apple cart when he started bringing people in here.
Say that again?
I said he really upset the apple cart, so to speak, when he started bringing folks in. Frank Yeager. Well, you know, he's ex-FBI man. In fact, right. I think he was on Kennedy's...
Secret Service.
Secret Service. I said FBI. And he was Newman's back watcher, and they go way back, and then he brought in a lot of intellectuals, you know, and then he started bringing in blacks to put into high positions. He brought in Joe Atkins, and he brought in what's the guy just died here a few months ago, Booker Rice. And of course, at one point in time, Milburn Maupin, when Sam Noel retired, Milburn served as interim superintendent. And of course, he
first, I guess, the first African American superintendent right. in the area.
Right, right.
Milburn Maupin.
Yeah, and.
Did he want the main job?
I don't think so. As I recollect, of course,
he's deceased now, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And you're talking, you know, 40 years ago.
Right.
But I don't think Milburn. I've known Milburn for years. I knew his whole family because we kind of grew up together down the West End. And Milburn was a few years older than me, but he had a brother that's the same age I am and a sister. And so I knew the whole family. They were Seventh-day Adventists.
Was there any dispute on the board about hiring Newman Walker? Was that pretty much consensus?
No. Newman, I mean, the board actually realized that from Milburn was a brilliant person. He was very outstanding.
Milburn
Maupin, intellectually, you know, and administratively. And there's no doubt in my mind that he could have done the job, you know. But I just don't think that they felt, there was a feeling that it was not quite, interim was okay, as long as it's known that they were going to bring in somebody else to eventually head up the system, you know.
And at the time, who was the first African-American on this Louisville Board of Education? Who would that have been? Was that before your time, I guess, or?
No, that was Woodford Porter, I believe.
Woodford Porter. And that was maybe 8 years before you came on or so?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Because Woodford was very instrumental in my going on the board, because I've known Woodford all my life. And so he really was the one that recommended me and approached me about going on the board. After Woodford, we had Neville Tucker. And Neville was still on the board. In fact, when Woodford, I think Woodford served two terms. And then they needed someone to replace the black member of the board. And it boiled down between Neville and myself. And of course, Neville being a politician, been involved in politician, and me being no involvement and very naive, we had a community meeting at the YMCA, Chestnut Street YMCA, to select the person to replace Woodford. And Neville, as I said, being a political person, did a political thing. You know, when we got to the meeting, Neville had the votes already. You know, I hadn't talked to anybody. You know, I just had a guy that worked with me, worked for me, who was very articulate to nominate me, you know. But as far as me calling folks and asking to vote for me and what have you, I hadn't done a thing, you know. And of course, it became obvious when we got to the meeting and got down to the final vote. Everybody was very enthusiastic. And I knew all of these folks, you know, and they knew me and had known me for years, you know, because of my family connections around town. But Neville had it sold up. So Neville replaced...
He'd essentially campaigned already. Yeah.
And he replaced Woodford. And then later on, a few years later, I forget the lady's name. But at that time, there had been a big shift in population as far as black-white ratio. And the ratio had gotten to the point where it was almost better than half of the Louisville system was black because of the migration to the county. And so they decided, well, okay, it's time now for us to have another black board member. Five board members, I believe. And they, Woodford contacted me. Like I say, I've known Woodford for years. And at that time, I had become very active in a lot of organizations, very civic type organizations, like I mentioned, the Community Action Commission, the JCs, what's it?
Chamber of Commerce, maybe? Were you?
No, not the Chamber, but there's plenty of them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as you can see from some of these things around here.
Mm-hmm.
And I agreed on the condition that I would run for the full term if I received the appointment. So I received the appointment.
So you and Tucker served together for a while?
Me and I served together for a while.
Was Tucker on the board into the busing situation, or had he stepped down by then? Or?
I think he had left.
He's in L.A. now, is that correct?
Yeah, he's in California somewhere out there. Yeah, he's been gone for years.
And that's the son of CU Bank Tucker, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And Neville and I grew up together. I've known Neville all my life, practically. We went to Boy Scouts together.
And was the Board of Ed back then, was it just at-large members, or was it geographic zones, just the city, Louisville?
It was at large.
Okay, so there was no guarantee for black representation.
Because when we first ran, that's when I received my lesson in the election processes, because I was assigned to a person, and I think Woodford had a lot to do with this, because he knew the way it worked. And I went to all the precinct captains all around town in the black areas to get out the vote thing, you know. And I had some cards printed up and what have you. And I was riding with this guy that was a worker for the party, you know. And so that was when I really found out how the system worked. And of course, like I say, all over town, and it was an at-large situation. They just went to districts, I think, after the
merger. Okay, I thought that was the case. I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
It's just that there was enough black population to start getting black representatives on there. Right. It wasn't because it was that neighborhood necessarily.
Right.
It's just that there was enough numbers.
Right.
I'm guessing. Okay. So when did you become?
I had a running mate at the time that was well known, well liked, and in the white community. That was Dr. Bell. So John Bell and I sort of ran as a team. I can remember we met, I think, in Woodford's funeral home parking lot. And he brought me a bunch of his material, and I brought him a bunch of my material. And he had his supporters distribute my material in his area, in the East End and what have you. And I had my campaign people distribute his material in the West End.
So there was cooperation between the black and white members as the board developed.
In fact, we ran twice together.
Bell.
Yeah, Dr. John Bell. He's a psychiatrist.
Tell me a little bit about Newman Walker once he got to Louisville as the superintendent. How did he do? How did the Louisville city community regard him?
Well, I think, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Newman was way ahead of Louisville in his progressive approach to education. And I don't know whether you ever heard about the satellite lunch program. They had what was called a satellite lunch program, and Newman, he was loved by some and hated by others in his approach, because he took a futuristic approach to education. You know, I mean, it was one of those things where the teachers didn't necessarily have to come in certain ties and all this type of thing, casual type of, and some of the people he brought in, a lot of folks here the folks here, Louisville's a fairly conservative town, and he brought in, he thought they were yuppies, and he used to have these sessions where the faculty staff members would have these meetings and touchy-feely type things. And so some people were crazy about Newman. I think Newman established the foundation for a lot of things that have happened, eventually. But I think he was a little early at that time. And then he had what they call the satellite lunch program. And that was a big issue. And it created a lot of notoriety. And a lot of folks were worried that was near the end of our first term. And a lot of folks were worried because John and I really weren't worried. We were up for re-election. And we weren't really worried about being re-elected. But the folks got worried. The powers that be were worried. And so at the last minute,
because we had what's the guy's name that just died? He ended up being one of the good guys. He was Secretary of State or something. He served on the board of aldermen for a long. He finally changed from Republican to Democrat, and he served on the board of aldermen for a long time. And then he won a state office and served 4 years. And he just died here within the last year. But anyway, he and another lady were running against John and I. And their whole focus was on the satellite lunch program, because John and I had voted for this satellite lunch program. We had a central operating place where all the lunches were done, and then they were sent out.
Yeah, like to a the commissary.
School. Yeah, okay. You know. And that was another one of Newman's innovations. But they were really the power that be were looking. The progressive element in the community knew that John and I both supported Newman. In fact, the whole school board really supported Newman because they were elected, you know, on the basis of that support. So at the last minute, they threw together a campaign, and it proved that it wasn't really necessary because we weren't running away, you know. But that was for our second term. But I think if Newman had stayed, it would have been a good thing for the overall board, but they would never have accepted Newman in the county.
Once it was Jefferson County Schools merged.
And
for the reasons you're talking about, he was too progressive.
Yeah. And the county was even more conservative than the city.
Is that when he decided to leave? I mean, that's one of my questions.
Well, it was a mutual agreement when the whole deal went down. Between the two boards.
That he would leave he would not be?
That neither of the two superintendents would be over the merged system.
So his option was to take a demotion or go find another job?
No, he didn't have an option.
He wasn't going to work here at all?
Yeah.
And that was understood?
And they brought in Ernie Grayson.
From the county?
I think they went to the depths of degradation to get him.
He wasn't already working in Jefferson
County?
Yeah,
he was.
Okay, kind of an administrator?
He was accounting man. He was in the accounting field, and so he was the first superintendent of the merged system, and in my opinion, should not have been, you know. And of course, when they finally decided that Ernie didn't have what it takes to run a system that size, then I can't think of the guy they brought in next. But he was sort of the guy that his main function and objective and reason for being there was the guy to get the system in shape. Because during that first, during Grayson's term, the city board usually was outvoted in regard to projects and philosophy and so forth, you know. And it took several years.
The Jefferson County membership dominated, ideology dominated in the first few years.
Yeah. But eventually, cream rises to the top. And eventually, as the top layer became neutralized, so to speak, and brought in new superintendents. Then those new superintendents were looking for performance and quality and progress. So eventually the top positions, assistant superintendents and directors and so forth, were primarily, I'd say 90% people that came from the city. From the city board.
I see. Now, let me go back to the lawsuits that were filed in the early 70s. The Kentucky
Commission on Human Rights, the Kentucky Civil Liberties Union, the Legal Aid Society, the NAACP were all behind what were, I think, actually two different lawsuits, but the same basic idea, that there needed to be greater levels of integration in Louisville.
Right.
Now, how did the city, you were on the city board, this is prior to the merger, you were the chairman, I don't remember if you were the chairman by this point, but you were certainly on the board by this point. You know,
I was chairman at the time of the merger.
Okay, so this is back about 72, I think, maybe.
Okay.
How did the Board of Ed, the Louisville Board of Education, regard these lawsuits and these groups that
I guess you might say we were not necessarily, we were somewhat neutral, because as school board members, naturally, we were not supposed to be political, although this affected the board. But we were more interested at that time. The tax base was eroding from the Louisville Board of Education. As folks moved out and the tax base was dropping and dropping, and we were concerned about how we were going to keep the board running.
Just from a financial
standpoint. And what happened was that we eventually voted ourselves out of business. We said if the county don't want to merge, then we'll just vote ourselves out of business. And under the statutes and what have you, they had to take it. And so we went to Frankfort. And at that time, and to the state legislature. And my predecessor in the legislature was Speaker of the House then.
Bloom?
Norm Bloom. He was Speaker of the House.
What? Okay.
And, of course, I think Norm's stand in regard to the Louisville situation cost him the speakership, because the following year he was voted out as speaker.
He came back as a rep, but
yeah,
voted out as speaker.
Yeah, right. And that next year in 77 was when I ran against him in the primary, and I beat him.
What party?
Democrat.
Norm was, yeah. Bloom was a Democrat,
yeah.
You're a Democrat. Okay.
Yeah. And Norm lived right around the corner from me.
Is he white
or black?
Good guy.
He's white.
Okay.
Yeah. Good guy. And we never fell out, and there was never antagonism. It was very clean. We ran on merits. There was no name calling. And in fact, Norm was the first one to tell me that I'd won. Because, like I say, I was a novice. As far as politics was concerned, I had run twice for the school board, but there's nothing like running. You know, I can remember that all of the precinct captains were against me, except for Neville. Neville Tucker was one of the precinct captains in that district. I had a meeting, a party-like invite, all the precinct captains. I had booze and food and a whole bit. None of them showed up. Not a one.
So how'd you win the election?
I went around and talked to all of them. They, you know, passed out a few funds. And, well, I won it on the basis of my name and my background. A lot of people knew me in Louisville, in the area. And
just the West End, pretty much? Or is
well,
it larger?
Yeah, primarily the West End, yeah. And I won by 50-some votes.
50-some votes.
50-some votes. We were having a election party. It wasn't a victory party, because we didn't have sense enough to even take the votes off the machine. You know, that's how naive me and my campaign people were. You know, somebody came in and said, "Well, in my district, I got the election." I said, "What is that? You know, I got off the machine. You won with such and such. it depends on what happens. I beat Norm in his own district, you know, in his own district within the
total his own
precinct. Yeah. And he called me. I said, I just called from Carl. I just want to congratulate you. It looks like you've won. And I think you do a good job, blah, blah, blah. Because he had tried to, he had asked me not to run. He had sent word to me through intermediary that if I would wait, and because he knew that I had a, based on my exposure and my 8 years and a half, almost 9 years on the school board, you know, so I'd become pretty well known and had established a pretty good reputation. And plus I had been the, you know, district manager of Mammoth Insurance at that time. Mammoth was a black insurance company. And as I said, I had worked in a lot of different organizations and groups. So I was fairly well known. I think Norb felt that I could beat him. And he said a word to me that if I would wait, let him run one more term, then he would retire and throw his vote towards me. Of course, my people said, no, we got him. Anyway, make a long story short, we won the election, and Norv was a real gentleman about it. They asked him, was he going to ask for a recount since it was so close? And he said, no, I'm not. He said, I didn't come in here, what do you call it, crying or something, and I'm not going out that way. And we're friends to this
That's
day.
That's good. That's yeah. good. You don't get that much
anymore. No, not anymore.
Now, let me go back to this lawsuit that happened. You say the board was fairly ambivalent or neutral about the claim.
Well, we wanted the, we knew that to survive, we were at a point where we were worried about survival.
Money survival right. more than this desegregation.
Right. But we acknowledged that, we were going to have to do something. And we tried all kind of different things and different ideas and so forth. But we finally realized that we weren't going to be able to make it because it wasn't getting any better. Things weren't getting any better. It was going downhill. Of course, you got to deal with the teachers union and, you know, all these other factors. So we finally went to Frankfurt and said, well, we just go out of business.
Did you attend the trials that happened in Judge Gordon's court?
This was going on another arena.
Right. So tell me about the Frankfurt meetings. I know that brought a lot of attention, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, it brought a lot of attention because that was, like I say, when the legislature went along with our program, and of course the county was against it, but there were a few county school members that were in support of us. They were isolated by the other school members, and but before that actually took place, as I recall, the court came down with the decision.
Right.
And made the decision that the school board we had to integrate, and then of course the legislature had to set up the apparatus for the integration. They set up the apparatus where the county superintendent, I mean the overall superintendent, how he would be elected, and how the board would evolve down to what's now I think 6 members.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth. And I still don't know why they ever decided. Is it 6 members or 5?
I'm not sure, but I know what you mean. There was a grandfathering in or whatever you call it. And they wanted to have, I think at one point it was the city was arguing that they should have proportional representation. Like maybe not 50-50 number of members, but there should be a...
But the county always had one member more than the city when we merged.
Okay. So, they had more population too, though, didn't they?
Yeah, their school population had
considerably
grown.
Larger by that point.
Yeah.
Now, what were the meetings like between the county and the city boards before this all happened?
Very cantankerous.
Describe some of this for me.
Well, I mean, usually it was very few things that we really agreed on. You know, when we started talking about who would be who, what, and what programs and all this type of thing. I mean, it just was a cantankerous situation.
Different philosophies.
Yeah, almost anti.
What about the personalities? Were those?
Well, you had from one end of the spectrum to the other. Every school board member, although the majority of the Louisville board, were fairly progressive and futuristic, whereas the majority of the county board was just the opposite, very conservative. And then you had some members on the county board, one or two, that were more aligned with the city. And then you had a couple of members on the city board that were more aligned with the county, you know, had gone along with a lot of things that had transpired on the city board, but had never been enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you had the same thing on the county board. But in fact, I can remember that when we had one meeting in Frankfort, the county board left one of their members, who was a very outspoken, and of course he was very wealthy too, but he more or less went along with the city board on different things, and they just went off and left him there. He had to ride back from Frankfort with us. That's right. He rode back from Frankfort with us.
Presiding with you,
what
basically.
Was his name? He's a doctor. He died not too long ago. And he was very wealthy. He had a whole lot of kids. What was his name? Because I remember he gave me a $100 contribution when I ran for the
legislature.
Oh, what was his name? Tall, real tall guy. Wasn't that old a guy? Yeah, I guess he's maybe a little younger than me. Vonderhaar. Yeah, and they left Vonderhaar in Frankfort, and he rode back with us, because I mean, like us, we just took one car, or two cars, or something like that. But they went off and left him.
Now you remember Judge Gordon? You say you weren't in the trials, but you remember his involvement in this? And
I remember Judge Gordon, but I can remember vaguely, because like I say, this is 30 years ago, you know. Actually, it's longer than that. 76, 30 years.
A little more. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't remember Judge Gordon as being real enthusiastic about the court's decision. But he was directed by the court to carry it out. And one thing about Judge Gordon, he carried out the law. I don't think he did it enthusiastically, but he did it.
He followed the higher court.
He followed the higher court's directives,
mm-hmm.
You know, and he was very forcible about enforcing it, you know.
Even if he didn't deep down want to
right.
that idea right. to be carried out.
Right. And of course, you know, you had all of these street demonstrations and riots. And
let's talk about some of that. What do you remember from that?
I can remember it was awful. I can remember a three-way conversation. I was in my basement. Like I said, I was chairman of the board when they were getting ready to start the actual busing.
Were you chairman of the Jefferson County Board?
I was chairman of the Louisville Board.
Okay.
And they were getting ready to start the busing. And I was on the phone with Todd Hollenbach, who was the Jefferson County judge, and Harvey Sloan, who was the mayor of Louisville. And we were talking, they were talking about the threats and what have you, and, you know, we were just discussing what needed to be done and what they had heard and wanted to know what I'd heard. And during that conversation was when one of the policemen was hit in the eye with a staple. Somebody was shooting staples. And the policeman lost his eye behind that. And Todd had to leave to go see about that because they had these demonstrations and these riots and things going on out there. And it was pretty bad for a while. And I can remember my oldest boys, my two oldest boys, were unwary victims because they had planned on going to Central, which where me and their mother went to school, both graduated from. And when the integration came in, they were both assigned to Valley, which was out there in the middle of Dixieland, so to speak. And I can remember that we were given a route that we could go through the back streets to go out there on various occasions to get them. And, you know, my oldest son was chased back into the school by some guys with baseball bats. They were coming out to catch the bus or something. And it just so happened that the football team, which was integrated, of course, athletes, they're often closer than the general public. And when these guys came in, the football team had just finished practicing, and they were all coming out. And they saw these guys, and they chased them out of the school.
The people who were chasing your son.
Who were chasing my son.
And were they chasing your son because he's black or because he's Carl Heinz's son?
Well, they probably didn't know who he was.
Okay. Yeah. There was a chance of that. I should ask. You know.
No, they didn't know. They just saw him and some black guys, black
coming
kids.
From Central.
Coming from school out there at Valley, out there on Dixie Highway. And they ran back into school. These guys ran into school after them and just having the football team was coming through. Of course, there were some black guys on the football team. And it's a funny thing that the blacks who lived in the county and were already there at the time of the merger, we had integration in the county and the city, but you had more of it in the county than you did in the city. And the blacks who lived in the county were considered part of us, so to speak, part of the county.
They were suburban blacks.
They were treated different from the blacks who were bussed in. They were given preferential treatment from the standpoint of athletics and extracurricular activities and so forth.
But if you were coming from Central to Valley or wherever.
Yeah, if you were coming from a city school, and the predominant school at that time was Central, you know, predominantly black school, you had a few people going to Eastern and some of the other high schools in the city, you know, Mayo and what have you. We had quite a few in
Mayo. Mayo was pretty black by this point, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, not really.
No?
Not really. It was it had a good amount because they had all the good athletes back then, Mayo, Manuel, both. But they were treated altogether different from the blacks who went to Valley and who went to Pleasure Ridge and who went to the other high schools out there in the county. They were given preferential treatment.
So there wasn't an.
They were part of the family.
Right. They weren't antagonistic to the blacks that were there before this lawsuit and merger all started because they didn't cause the problem.
Right.
They probably didn't see them as someone causing.
They
the problem.
They didn't see them as invaders.
Right.
You know, and so. Hmm. That was really a strange phenomenon.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
Did the state police and the county police and the city police and the administrators of law enforcement, did they handle this well,
the
violence?
The ultimately, I think that the riots cost both Harvey Sloan and Todd Hollenbach their political careers, because when they were both elected, we could see these two bright young stars that were going to move on up the line to governors and senators and what have you. But I think the way it was handled, because after some critiques came out, Todd was criticized for not calling in the city police were on standby And according to the record, so to speak, Harvey had offered help to Todd, but Todd refused it. He did not choose to use the city police, although things were really kind of out of hand out there in the county.
And the reasoning for that?
Well, the reason for that, you can have a lot of enthusiasm in the county police force.
To accept the city cops as helpers?
Well, some of that, and then also to the fact that they, in enforcing, you know, the law, the way it should have been done. So I think history will say that it wasn't handled, while it was handled sufficiently, it wasn't handled as well as could should have been, and as effectively as it should have been. Mm-hmm. A lot of the rioting and a lot of the destruction and things that happened were, and we had school board meetings that were very tense, to the point of where at that time, Bill Summers was on the board with me. We were two black members of the board. And when we used to meet out at the County Board of Education building out on Bishop Lane, they used to send police to escort us to our cars. Yeah. And we walk and we see these police, and they weren't police, they were rent a cops, more or less. Security people, you know. And these guys, what they found us from? I asked the guy, what are you talking about? We have orders to escort you all to your cars, you know. And it was kind of nerve-wracking because I had to drive all the way from Newburgh Road and Bishop's Lane to Southwestern Parkway, which is the far end of Louisville. And, you know, I got kind of nervous. I saw a car that would make every turn that I made, you know, and then I used to make some turns just to see if this car would still make that turn. You know, I guess it was just my imagination going wild, but it was kind of nerve-wracking there for a while.
Well, with everything else going on, that's probably a reasonable assumption.
Yeah, because that was some things happening, you know, that happened during that period that my son answered the phone one day. At that time, he was a kid, and he answered the phone, and they said, "We gonna kill your daddy," you know, and hung up. And I told him, I said, "Well, if they're gonna do something, that ones that gonna call, they ain't not gonna do anything. But still, you know, right. Think about that stuff."
Right.
But it was kind of rough.
Okay, now just to kind of wrap things up here, you've been an elected official since '68. And through this busing thing and a little bit after and into the state legislature. You know, you've got a pretty good read on the black community's public opinion. What was, you know, how did the black community regard the lawsuits that were filed, the push for desegregation, and the merger? You know, what was, just help color for me.
Well, it was mixed. There were mixed emotions in the black community. There were some people that on both sides, there were some people that weren't particular about integration. You know, they had, well, they don't want to be bothering us, we don't want to be bothering them.
Status
quo. You know,
quo.
And then they also, there was a lot of black people that were against busing their kids out to the county, you know, for various reasons. Safety was the main factor. You know, my kids gonna be out there on Dixie Highway, and they would take me an hour to get to them, and then something happens. You know, so for a long time, there were a lot of black people, and there was others who felt that this is what needed to be done, and were in favor of it. So you know, all black people, much to a lot of people's regard, were not in favor of the merger and the integration. They were in favor of integration. But they weren't in favor of the busing.
The distance.
And the plan and the way it was done.
Do you think education was improved with this change? At least in the...